This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Hello and welcome. I'm Natalie Pinchem, and I will be reading summaries of some of the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery on September 27th, 2013. The topics of the articles featured in this podcast are pituitary surgery, functional neurosurgery, and malpractice litigation. Treatment of acromegaly by endoscopic transphenoidal surgery. Surgical experience in 214 cases and cure rates according to current consensus criteria. A clinical article by Daria Hazer and colleagues. With this report, the authors introduce 214 cases of growth hormone or GH adenomas with relatively high cure rates of 62.6%, according to the most recent consensus criteria defined in 2010. The authors emphasize the importance of the more than 50% decrease in one-month postoperative insulin-like growth factor I, or IGF-I levels, and random GH levels lower than 2.33 micrograms per liter, detected after the first postoperative day in follow-up imaging, in predicting the cure in acromegaly. The most important contribution of this study is that the data were analyzed with the consensus criteria defined in both 2000 and 2010. Although the 2010 consensus criteria imply strict guidelines, many patients who fail to be defined as cured may meet the cure criteria in longer follow-up. For those who have GH levels lower than 1 microgram per liter and MRI scans free of tumor at the 3-month follow-up, but fail to fulfill the current cure criteria for acromegaly, additional therapy need not be rushed because these patients will be in remission at the 1-year follow-up. This study suggests that surgeon experience is of great significance in achieving high cure rates. Approximately 50 primary operations and 100 operations for the overall group of acromegaly cases, mainly with macroadenomas, seem to be reasonable thresholds for the surgeon to achieve higher cure rates. Unchanged safety outcomes in deep brain stimulation surgery for Parkinson disease despite a decentralization of care. A clinical article by Robert McGovern and co-authors. This study examined whether changing neurosurgical practice patterns impacted perioperative safety in the placement of deep brain stimulation or DBS electrodes for Parkinson's disease. The authors used a national database and examined the effects of patient and hospital characteristics on outcomes, including complications, length of hospital stay, and discharge status over an 8-year period, beginning when DBS was approved by the FDA for the treatment of Parkinson's disease in 2002. They found that patients undergoing DBS in more recent years have tended to be older and more medically sick. In addition, there are many more DBS cases now being performed at low-volume centers, such as community hospitals and small academic medical centers, than at the beginning of the DBS era. Despite these changes in the application of DBS, short-term safety outcomes have not changed. Complications, length of stay, and discharge status at small hospitals that performed fewer surgeries were no different from those at large academic medical centers. Although the authors initially found this surprising, They interpret it to mean that DBS was previously concentrated in just a few academic medical centers, but that well-trained neurosurgeons have filtered out into the community. They conclude that with suitable training, maintaining a high-volume practice may not be critical for perioperative safety in DBS surgery. Comparison of plaintiff and defendant expert witness qualification in malpractice litigation in neurological surgery. A clinical article by Jean Anderson Eloy and co-workers. Malpractice litigation plays an important role in the practice of defensive medicine and subsequent contributions to increasing healthcare costs in the United States. Expert witness testimony has been rarely studied, but may be a critical aspect of proceedings, as medical experts interpret complex pieces of evidence that may be misunderstood by non-medical laypersons and thus potentially impact proceedings considerably. As the role of expert testimony and potential professional repercussions has been controversial in the past, the authors examined the expertise of neurological surgeons serving in this capacity. Using the Westlaw Next database, they identified 326 cases involving neurosurgical testimony since 2008. They found that individuals testifying for both sides had experience exceeding 30 years per person. Plaintiff witnesses were more likely to testify multiple times for the same side. Defense witnesses had significantly higher scholarly impact, as measured by the H index, and were far more likely to be involved in academic practice, potentially indicating a greater level of expertise. Surgical societies may need to clarify the necessary qualifications and ethical responsibilities of practitioners serving as witnesses, particularly those who choose to testify frequently. Tumor shrinkage after transsphenoidal surgery for non-functioning pituitary adenoma. A clinical article by Sven Berkman and colleagues. Volume reduction of non-functioning pituitary adenoma, such as after pituitary tumor apoplexy, has been described. Nevertheless, after surgery, even considerable remnants may shrink. The aim of this study was to assess tumor shrinkage after transsphenoidal surgery. The study included 140 patients with postoperative remnants of non-functioning adenomas. All patients underwent transsphenoidal procedures with 1.5 Tesla intraoperative MRI. Scans of the depicted remnants were compared with scans taken after 3 and 12 months. At 3 months after surgery, tumor shrinkage of 89% plus or minus 20% of the residual volume was detected for 50% of the patients. The remnants disappeared for 45 patients. Positive predictors for shrinkage were cystic tumors, additional resection guided by intraoperative MRI, and smaller remnant volume. Negative predictors were growth into the cavernous sinus, previous pituitary surgery, and preoperative panhyperpituitarism. Between 3 months and 1 year postoperatively, no remnant volume decreases were detected. After 2.7 years, one patient with shrinkage had to undergo another surgery because of progression. In conclusion, spontaneous tumor volume reduction of non-functioning pituitary adenoma remnants may be seen within 3 months after surgery. According to multivariate analysis, predictors of shrinkage are smaller remnant volume and no history of previous pituitary surgery. Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org.